Okay, thank you, Anita, for coming in today to talk about mental fitness. At Morton Hall Health Club, we prioritize creating a welcoming community, and we want all of our members to feel their best, and we want to support them on that journey. And I think mental fitness and physical fitness is obviously extremely interlinked. So hopefully we'll have this chat today and members can take away some practical things they can do to add into their routine to keep their mental fitness up. So let's just start with a bit about you and how we know each other and how we got on to this whole subject.
Yeah, so thanks. Thanks for inviting me in, Lucy. So I did the 6-week challenge. I've been doing a series of PT sessions, probably for about the last year, but very much just coming to the gym, doing my PT, and going away again. And so when the 6-week challenge came up for me, it was an opportunity to build a connection, actually, because I live on my own and I work for myself, and I find that that's probably one of the things that in my life that's sort of missing at the moment. So I joined the 6-week challenge, not really with fitness goals in mind, but more to build a community. But it's been an amazing journey. But I suppose with that in mind, it came to the forefront, and a few of the conversations that I'd had with people along the way, that it's an amazing journey to work on your physical health, but actually people come for all sorts of different reasons. And alongside our physical health, as you just said, our mental fitness is really important. And actually you can't separate those things. In fact, if you look at the World Health Organization's definition of health, they talk about a three-legged stool. They talk about complete physical, mental, and social well-being. And so to be healthy, actually, we've got those three pillars, those three legs. So our physical health, which I know you know, the 6-week challenge is great at building on that. But then that mental fitness side of it, the social side is great. So we just wondered whether we could bring something in which actually helped people to focus in on what are those maintenance things that they can do to make sure that they're looking after their mental fitness alongside their physical fitness.
Yeah, definitely. And what we're really excited about this new 6-week challenge, obviously bringing you and your expertise on board with doing more to do with mental fitness, is doing weekly challenges. So currently we do physical challenges every week. So for example, X amount of gym sessions, a certain amount of steps, food logging, things like that. But I think bringing on some mental fitness challenges every week will be really great, because it can be easy, I think, to forget about that side of things. Like you say, that definition of health is a great reminder, because you think of health, I think, a lot of the time, incorrectly, but you know, eating well and exercising. But it's a lot more than that for you to really feel your best, isn't it?
And what's really interesting, actually, there was a study done quite a few years ago now where they were looking at longevity. And so they were looking at all of the things that we do that mean that we're likely to maybe die earlier than we should. So they were looking at our, as you just said, what we eat, our physical health, whereabouts in the country we live, all sorts of different factors. And what consistently comes out of the top whenever ever there's any research done around this, is actually loneliness. So you are more likely, I don't know how they discovered this, but you're more likely to die early if you are lonely than if you smoke 15 cigarettes a day. So there is something really there about social connection. But also some really sort of like simple maintenance things that you can do to look after your mental health. So the reason that so I became so interested in this, I've been delivering mental health education for probably about 14 years now, and did a degree, a master's degree in the psychology and the neuroscience of mental health. And actually, you know, we're told this stuff all the time about you know, how to look after ourselves. But what was fascinating for me was when you start to delve into the science behind the things that we're told. And you know, there's reasons why we're told to do these things. So actually what I want to try and bring into the challenge this time is to not only give people that the sort of like the maintenance things that they can do to improve their mental health, but the why behind it as well. So looking at the science behind what we're doing, I think helps people to really, you know, get it and relate to it as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think even I find that with clients and members in the gym, knowing the why is a great source of motivation. When you know why you're doing something, what it's doing, whether that's why you're doing a squat or eating a certain food, or whether that's why you're reaching out to your friends or joining new community groups, or, you know, whatever side of health it is, I think knowing why you're doing something is extremely motivating. And that is one of the reasons why we do prioritize so much at the gym, like our social events, our summer party, our winter party. We do the 6-week challenge and we do meetups where we go for a walk, we get a coffee, we grab a croissant, which, yeah, sometimes like people would say, oh, is that healthy? Yeah, it is. To have those conversations, to meet like-minded people, not only does that help you stay with habits that are in line with your goals, you know, if you're in a community of people that have similar goals to you, that's been shown to help a lot. But it's also easier to make friends when you've got people who are on the same kind of journey as you. So we do try our best to do things that create a group and community feel, so people can make friends, they can connect. But obviously we're always open and wanting to do more, which is exactly why we're having this conversation with you. Something you brought up that I thought was great, because it's actionable and, you know, simple to understand and do, is the clangers idea. Can you just do a little summary and then maybe we'll go into depth about each one?
Yeah. So I can't take the credit for this. The clangers was actually, the term clangers was coined by, and people my age, so I'm in my 50s, may remember somebody called Dr. Phil, who was on the TV for a while. And back in 2008, actually, the government commissioned the New Economics Foundation to look at what keeps the nation mentally well. So around about the same time, we were being told to eat our 5 pieces of fruit and veg a day to stay physically well. And they wanted to give the nation some ideas around how to look after their mental well-being. So they went and did this study, and they came up with the 5 ways to well-being. Now, if you know anything about the research that was done around physical health, you'll know that actually it wasn't 5 pieces of fruit and veg that we were recommended to eat, but they thought that, you know, that's probably what we could all manage. So the same is sort of true of the 5 ways to well-being. So there are 5 simple things that we can do that we can concentrate on that help to keep us mentally well. But Dr. Phil recognised that there were probably some things missing from that. So there were an extra 3. So the 5 were to stay connected, to keep learning, to be active, to take notice, and to give back. And Dr. Phil added to eat well, to rest, and to sleep. So as the 6-week challenge is 6 weeks, it seemed to fit quite nicely. We've got 8 there, but 2 of those we're covering off with the 6-week challenge anyway, with the being active, and the eating well is part of the 6-week challenge as well. So looking at our nutrition and having a food diary, so that left us with 6, which was perfect. So we're going to concentrate in. So what we're talking about really with the clangers is we're talking about a maintenance program. Mm-hmm. So although I deliver a lot of training in mental health, we're not really looking here at mental health diagnoses. What we're looking at is what can we do on a regular basis, which is good practice to ensure that we maintain good mental well-being. And the first one of those, so if we go through the clangers, the first one of those is what we've just been talking about, is connection. And the fact that actually we're social beings, and we're meant to live in connection with one another. We're not meant to be isolated. And there's been so much research done around this. So if you look at the science behind it, you'll see that in situations where we are isolated from each other, actually we don't do well. And if you think back to things like the Romanian orphanages, where children were left in cots on their own. A lot of those children died because of the lack of connection, that the physical touch actually and connection. So we, our nervous systems are designed to co-regulate each other. So we're actually designed to live in community with one another. So to build those connections is really important. So one of the things that we're going to do around the challenge is to think about how we can build connection in, how we can form new connections, how we can stay connected, but maybe deepen the connections that we have with the people that we already sort of come across. Because a lot of our connections are, particularly I would say, in today's society, a lot of our connections are quite superficial. So how do we deepen those connections? So connect is the first one. The second one is about learning. And this doesn't mean that you have to go and study an academic subject or, you know, sign up to do a degree. This is about just doing something that you've not done before. And again, if we think about the science behind it, what happens is that every time we do something we've not done before, we fire up a new neural pathway. And as we keep doing that, that strengthens that pathway. And so it actually keeps our brains healthy and active. So if you get into that sort of maintenance zone, if you like, where you just only ever do what you've always done, you know, you're not creating that potential for your brain to grow and to develop. So
I think sometimes as well, particularly as adults, we maybe don't do enough like hobbies and just fun stuff for no reason. Yeah, I think that's really important and can instantly almost make you feel happier or even just not worry, because I always find, you know, if you get kind of lost in an activity, which you particularly do when you're learning something, because there's a lot to think about and a lot to do, you can't think of other things. But I often get it with sport. A lot of people, a lot of the members I know get it like with boxing, like when we do the boxing classes, because there's combinations. A lot of the time it can be completely new for people. They say things like, oh, the time goes so quick, I get lost in it. Oh, like, I love it so much, it's such a release, like all those kind of phrases. And I feel like they're describing that same thing where they kind of get into that state of flow.
I was just gonna say, yeah, flow.
Yeah, I've read it, I can't remember what the book was called, maybe the Magic or something. Anyway, I'll find it, I'll link it for everyone. And it was just saying about, yeah, when you're in an activity you're enjoying and you lose track of time, that is a really good thing. Like, it makes you feel great. Obviously if you're learning something new, brilliant. If it's active, that ticks another box as well. But you're not in your head, you're just in the present moment, which is key. We all know how good, you know, doing breath work is, because it brings you to the present. I often find a lot of physical activity does that for me, like running. Yeah, so I think doing new things is great, and trying to find those things where you get in that state of flow where you lose track of time.
Yeah. And you've brought us on to another one of the elements, actually. So connect and learn are the first two. The active we're going to be doing anyway, because we're going to be doing that physical stuff around the challenge. And the N is about the taking notice. So what you've just said about being present is really important. And so this is about actually grounding yourself in the here and now, is what you've just said. And breath work is really a good way of doing that. So if we were going to think about, you know, how do we be a bit more present in today's society, I think I would want to set a challenge around trying to cut down screen time.
Yeah, I was just thinking less
phones. because
it's probably
scary. Often do we now, I mean, you only have to go out to a coffee shop, you know, and just sit and watch people, and how many times do you see people just embedded in their phones rather than just, you know, taking in the atmosphere and what's going on around them. And the same when you travel on a bus. I don't know if you've ever, you know, go on a bus or a train, the number of people who are so immersed in their digital devices rather than looking out of the window and, you know, looking at, you know, the beauty of what's going past the window.
Yeah. And also I think that almost links back to connection, because if you are on your phone, I often think that means you're kind of unavailable. So if I walked into the cafe at Morton Hill Health Club, and if you were sort of on your phone or your laptop, I'd think, oh, Anita's working, she's doing a Zoom call, she's replying to an email, maybe I won't bother her, I'll just put my hand up and I'll carry on. Whereas if you're kind of sat and you're looking out the window, you're just kind of chilling, then I'd be like, oh, hey, should we have a chat, you know? And I think we probably miss quite a lot of opportunities to connect with other people, even if it's just a little hello. I've listened to things about that, even about you need, I can't remember the exact number, but say like 4 people who you have a deep connection with, where you could call them with a problem and they would help you, no questions asked. But then you need a lot of little interactions in the day, like little hellos to the postman, to one of us guys at the gym, and that helps keep that kind of social battery up and your mental fitness up. So I think, yeah, when you're always like scrolling and stuff, which a lot of time we're not really looking at anything, aren't we? We're just scrolling. You're closing the door on all those like little interactions that you could be having, but it's probably just habit for a lot of us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we underestimate the value of those interactions. Do you know, as human beings, we have 3 fundamental things that I talk about. We need to be seen, we need to feel heard, and we need to feel valued. And a lot of those things get taken away when you immerse yourself in your own little bubble in the digital world, because as I said before, you know, we need each other for social, you know, connection and interaction, and that's where you get your sense of self from as well, isn't it, and self-worth and self-value. We're quite often online we're comparing ourselves to other people, and that sense of worth can sometimes, you know, take a bit of a dip. So that's our take notice. The G of our clang, if you like, is giving. And that's about, it's actually about random acts of kindness. So again, if you look at the science behind it, we've got an amazing hormone called oxytocin. And oxytocin is very much involved with social engagement as well. So oxytocin you may have heard of as sort of like the love drug. It's the hormone that we release through our social interactions, but mainly nurture. So if we were breastfeeding, or you know, you have a hug.
That's what I was thinking. I always heard, like, if you hug.
So oxytocin is an amazing hormone, but actually what we know about oxytocin is it's released when we do like things for other people. So when we give of ourselves to other people, it's really good for us. I was reading about a study the other day where they were talking about a residential home for the elderly, and they did a study to show which set of people did better. Half of the residents, they were care receivers, and the other half of the residents, they gave them people to care for. And the results were amazing in terms of longevity. The people that actually cared for others fared better than the people that received the care. So actually giving of ourselves to other people, doing kind things for other people, is really good for us. It releases oxytocin. And what oxytocin does in the bloodstream is it's got like little receptors, and it floods the bloodstream, and as it comes down your sort of arteries, it plants itself in the vessels, the lining of the vessels, and expands them. So actually oxytocin expands our blood vessels, which guards against things like cardiovascular disease, so heart attacks, strokes. We also know that when we're in social engagement, when we feel safe, the inflammation in our body goes down, our blood pressure goes down. So, you know, from a physical perspective, actually, you know, all the things we've been talking about in terms of social engagement, doing things for other people, learning new things, you know, all of these things are really sort of like backed up with science, and yet they're also really simple little things that we can be doing. So
I think as well it ties in when we are talking about giving, like a caregiving, or just giving, you know, that your sense of like value and purpose. Because if you're giving to someone, sort of, especially if they're like in need, if you like, then you feel needed, don't you? Because they need you.
Yeah.
So I guess it all kind of links together. And
yeah,
like you say, even though you're giving or you're being kind, it is actually doing a lot for you, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's so interesting as well, about hearing about like the blood vessels and stuff. We need to do a study, like you need to do something really kind, then like go for a run, maybe you'll be faster. that is really interesting to hear. And was there other ones? How far are we through now? Clangers.
We're clang. Yeah.
Clang. So, OG, give.
The
yeah.
Eat Well is going to be your what you do on the 6-week challenge, yeah, around people's food logging and diet. And then we've got two left. So rest. So it's really important. When I teach this to children, we talk about if you've got a phone or a tablet or a, you know, think about laptop, and you're really, really busy and you've got lots of tabs open, what happens to your computer? It sort of slows down,
it goes slow
and it crashes. And actually our brains are like that, particularly in modern society. We've got so many things that we can be engaged in, and half the time we're sort of like, it's almost like we've got all of these tabs open with all of these things running, that, you know, things that we need to think about and plan for. And actually our brains are the same. They need an opportunity to rest. So we have to think about how we're going to shut down the tabs at the end of the day to enable the brain actually to settle and to rest. And some of that is about, you know, doing things like relaxation exercises, or literally just taking yourself out for a walk and being in nature, or just allowing your brain to settle. And again, some of the research studies that have been done around things like mindfulness and meditation, you know, when we talk about mindfulness and meditation, quite often people think, you know, it's a bit woo-woo. But the science behind it is incredible. You know, if you actually look at the scientific studies and the benefits to your brain health of doing like 10 minutes meditation, it's quite incredible.
I think as well, if you do those things, you know it makes you feel good. Like, obviously all the science is great, and I definitely encourage people to look into that, especially if that's your thing, you like to research things. But also if it's not your thing, just like do 10 minutes of deep breathing, and then you'll know all you need to know, really. You do feel better. And we have some guided classes, so as part of the 6-week challenge, Ella does a fantastic deep breathing and stretching class on a Tuesday evening, which is, it's a late one at about 8:30, but it kind of actually sets you up really well to go to sleep. When I went to it, I was like, wow, the class finished, it's like it goes so quickly. She guides you through the breathing, which is brilliant. And also for all members, we have a class on a Saturday afternoon as well, stretch and relax. That's very similar, a bit more stretching with that one, but they do a deep breathing at the end. And sometimes I think having it guided in person is great. If not on Spotify and stuff, they have, or on all music providers, I'm sure they have good guided breathing and meditations. Because I think sometimes people feel like they're doing it wrong, or they feel like intimidated by saying it's a meditation, but it's just doing some deep breaths, you know, and being still. Eyes open, eyes closed, like I don't think it matters that much. Laying down, sat down, and even the time, like even if you just did a few minutes, I think that would be beneficial. But yeah, definitely doing something guided is useful, just with your breath, and it can make you just feel so much better, can't it?
So just on that, just thinking about the breath, it's again, we all know this stuff, don't we? I mean, how many times have you heard somebody say, oh, just take 3 deep breaths?
Yeah.
But if you look at the science behind it, again, we have two different pathways, if you like, neural pathways. So our nervous system is split into 2 bits, if you like. One of the parts of our nervous system, the sympathetic nerves, run down the spinal cord and very much innovate our fight or flight response. So if you are in a situation where you feel out of control, or you feel threatened or in danger, what happens is that there's a whole physiological response, but basically your kidneys on the, your adrenal glands on the top of your kidneys will release adrenaline. Heart rate increases, blood rate, blood pressure goes up. And so our heart is pumping, obviously, at a higher rate, but we're bringing in a lot more oxygen. And that oxygen is being pumped out to our leg muscles, to our arm muscles, to prepare us to either run or to fight. Now, our breathing rate changes quite a lot during that. And you'll know this. You'll know this for yourself, that if you had to stand up on a stage and, you know, speak in front of 1,000 people, your heart would be pounding, but you would also be breathing quite shallowly from the top of your chest rather from your belly. Your belly. So our breathing goes up into our chest. So we're bringing in all this quick breath. What also happens, just as an aside, and again, think about this for yourself and you'll know this, have you ever got a dry mouth when you are really nervous?
Yes.
So what happens is our bodies, because we need that energy to run or to fight, our body shuts down anything that it doesn't need in that moment. So our digestive system shuts down. Your saliva, you'll stop producing saliva, you'll stop digesting food, your stomach will stop doing that peristalsis action that it does to digest food, because it's more important in that moment that we have the energy that we need to be able to get out of the situation that we're in. So that's our fight or flight. Then the other side of our nervous system is the parasympathetic nerves. And that's very much innervated by what we call the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve wanders throughout the body. And when the vagus nerve kicks in, that's what they call our rest and digest. So once you've come off the stage and everybody gives you a pat on the back, Lucy, and says you've done an amazing job, you'll still feel the effects of that adrenaline for a while, but eventually your body will calm down and it'll go back to normal. Your breathing rate goes back to normal. Your heart rate slows down. Digestive system kicks in again. So if we actually want to kick in the rest and digest part of our nervous system, the breath is an amazing way to do it, because the first thing that happens when we go into fight or flight is the change in our breathing rate. So if you can naturally, if you can bring your breathing rate down, it slows your heart rate, it brings your blood pressure down, and everything comes back into balance. And actually what also happens is we go back into social engagement, because when we're in our fight or flight mode, we actually lose the cognitive ability in the same way that we would have when we're calm. So we tend to react rather than respond. We don't think clearly, we find it difficult to make decisions. So you might do or say things that you wouldn't normally do. So actually the breath underpins all of that. And that's why you'll have heard people, you know, particularly over recent years, there's been a real resurgence in breath work. You mentioned breath work earlier on. Because it, you know, the breath is our lifeblood really as human beings. But we can use it to control our autonomic nervous system and how we respond in those situations. So we're going to be looking at rest. And then you also mentioned sleep. So the S, the part of our clangers, is sleep. And actually sleep is so crucial in terms of our overall health. We know as adults that to be really healthy, we should be getting between 7 and 9 hours of sleep a night. But very few of us, you know, do that in this sort of like hectic lifestyle that we lead. So we're gonna do a little bit of work around how we can help people to look at their sleep hygiene as well.
I think someone's like all of that, firstly, so interesting, could listen to you talk about that all day. Secondly, sleep, so important. I think a lot of times as well we forget, in order to get 7 or 9 hours sleep, we need more sleep potential. So like we need to be in bed longer than 7 hours if we want 7 hours. So like I often speak to clients about this, and I'll be asking them, how much sleep do you get? Well, I went to bed at this time, got up then. And I'm like, okay, so as soon as you got in bed, did you immediately fall asleep? And I mean, some people can almost do that, great. Although also I did read somewhere how true this is for everyone. If you fall asleep in like less than 10 minutes, you're sleep deprived. I thought, interesting. Don't know what you think about that. But maybe, like I am quite lucky. I'm a pretty good sleeper. I do go to sleep quite quick. But I think just planning in the same way sometimes you set an alarm for the morning. I've recommended clients to set one for the evening to remind you, like, okay, you know, start getting ready for bed, have a bit of a wind down routine, get in bed, close your eyes, and then allow a bit of time for the 7 hours. Yeah, or read, exactly. Yeah. I just think, as you say, it's so important. It completely affects all of your mood. And it all ties in together, doesn't it? Because if you're not sleeping well, you're not going to get up for your gym session. If you don't do your gym session, that won't have that knock-on effect of, like, you won't have seen all your gym crew, you know, your community. You might not eat as well. And it's like, it can all kind of go into a bit of a spiral. Have you got some practical tips on what you can recommend people to do? Like, if they're listening to this now and they think, oh yeah, I'm not really prioritizing my mental fitness, could we maybe just go for a couple of points of what they should start doing now?
Do you know, I think when I work with people and organizations, I think it's always a good thing to do an audit to start with. And there's several things you can use to do an audit. Clangers is a good one to start. So even if you just got yourself a big piece of paper and you wrote out those things we've talked about, so yeah, connection, learning, being active, taking notice, giving, eating well, resting and sleep, mm-hmm, and you put them on a big piece of paper and actually be really honest with yourself about how well am I doing in each of these areas, and you can, yeah, sort of give yourself a score. And some of them will score higher than others, so it gives you a sort of an indication, okay, where do I maybe need to focus in on, yeah, to start.
And we're going to do this on the 6-week challenge.
So it's almost like a well-being action plan in a way. It's just like, you know, where am I falling down? There's another tool which I know Suffolk Mind actually use a lot in Suffolk, which is the emotional needs audit. Mm-hmm. And that one works around the basis that as human beings, we have 9 fundamental and emotional and psychological needs. Mm-hmm. And that if those needs aren't met, they tend to cause us distress. Mm-hmm. So you can look at something like an emotional needs audit, which focuses again around the first one's about around, you know, how safe do I feel? So it's about, you know, safety and security. It's about connection. So, you know, how much attention do I feel I get? Do I have the opportunity to give other people attention? One's around control. So how much control do I feel like I have in my life? You know, am I in control of most things? There's one about competency. So do I feel competent? Am I achieving something in my life? What's my social status like? So you know, do you feel like you have social status? There's something about community. So how connected to other people am I? You know, am I part of a wider community? And then there's one about intimate relationship as well. So do I feel seen and heard completely, like warts and all, by at least one person, one other mm-hmm. person? There's one about privacy. So do I have an opportunity to remove myself and consolidate my own experiences and just be with myself? And I know parents struggle with that one quite a bit. Mm. And then there's one around meaning and purpose as well. So do I feel like my life has meaning and purpose? And that's a huge one, you know. Big question. And so we get people to score themselves on a scale of from 1 to 7, 7 being the highest. So my need is absolutely met in this area. But if you're scoring 3 or below on any of those sort of needs, then generally it's causing you some form of distress. And so we see things like, you know, depression and anxiety come out of areas in your life where you're really not getting your needs met. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can look at it that way, or you can look at it from a maintenance perspective, you know, around the clangers. But just, I would say, doing an audit to start with, you know, mm-hmm. how am I faring in all of these areas? And have I got a few where I know that I'm really not, you know, my needs aren't getting met around this area? And then think about, okay, is there something I can do to help to bring that score up in that area, yeah, and start there?
And is there any good places you could signpost people to if they think, I'm not scoring too well? Like, obviously what we've been talking about today, as you've just said, is like a maintenance thing. So if you're feeling pretty good and you want to just keep feeling good and go beyond that and feel great, that's where the clangers come in. But if you do the audit and you think about how you're getting on and, yeah, it's not so great, are there some good places people can go, or resources, or what would be the steps there if you weren't sure what to do next?
That's a really big question that we probably haven't got time to answer, really, because it depends where those deficiencies are, doesn't it, within your within your life. I mean, I'm not, you know, I work in the field of mental health, so I'm very aware that sometimes people get to a place where they what they're experiencing is having a significant impact on their ability to enjoy their lives and to function. Mm-hmm. And that is at a point where some professional help may be really beneficial. So mm-hmm. Your GP is quite often the gatekeeper for that. Mm-hmm. So if you felt that what you were experiencing was more persistent than maybe mm-hmm. a bit of low mood or a bit of anxiety, it was more severe, and it's starting to impact on your ability to function, then maybe go and have a chat with your GP. If you mm-hmm. don't want to do that, the Suffolk Wellbeing Service is a really good place to start. Yeah. We have something called IAPT in this country, which is a NHS initiative, Improving Access to Psychological Therapy. It's the Suffolk Wellbeing Service that run IAPT in this county. And you can self-refer through their website, and what happens is that somebody will give you a ring, and they'll have a chat with you over the phone. It's, you know, a really good in-depth chat, and then from that they will be able to maybe signpost you to some things which they think are helpful. That might be secondary care, it might just be that actually some of the courses that they run might be really helpful for you. So that's always another place to start. GPs these days as well quite often have social prescribers, mm-hmm. Or mental health link workers alongside the surgery that can help you to look at your life and look at maybe some of those areas that we've been talking about that are, you're missing out on, mm-hmm. and help you to fill those gaps. So yeah, I think what we've been talking about is different to mental illness in a way. Mm-hmm. And for me, it comes down to the three things that I've just talked about. We all have times when, you know, our mental health dips. We all have times when we have low mood. We all have times mm-hmm. when we feel like we're walking through treacle and dragging a heavy weight behind us. But if that's persistent and it's more severe than just a bit of low mood, and you don't bounce back from it, and it's really impacting your ability to function and to interact with other people, then potentially you have sort of moved over into that area of illness where some professional help would be really, you know, would be really beneficial.
Yeah, well, I think there's so many things you've just said there that so many people who can help. I think that's really, really useful just to know, because I think without like your knowledge, I think you could be a bit like, oof, where would I start even there? So even just being like, okay, GP would be the first port of call, and then all the services you listed. But I mean, hopefully by us speaking about this more, and like even with the 6-week challenge, obviously it's a small impact, but it is an impact. You know, the people who do the challenge when we start on the 2nd of September and roll this out, keeping our mental fitness maintained as we do our physical fitness, it is ideal, isn't it? You know, if we can just keep ourselves feeling good and focus on these things to make ourselves feel even better, then that's great. And I think having the clangers thing is great, because it keeps it kind of short and sweet, makes us remember it. And I really hope us doing like the weekly mental fitness challenges will just get people to like start thinking about it and just prioritizing it as well. Because we always prioritize our physical fitness, I think. I mean, obviously I'm biased, I work in a gym, everyone here is super fit and like prioritize their fitness, but like you were saying earlier, sometimes when we're speaking the breath work and everything, people think, oh, that's not really that important. It is, as from everything you've said today, like how our brain, how our body responds to that. And I think we kind of innately just know it's true. Like as soon as you were saying about like when you're going to do a speech or something, like I'm pretty sure everyone has experienced that where, your mouth goes dry, your heart's racing. And it's like, if you take some deep breaths, you can control that. So even on that kind of side of things, you kind of know it to be true. I just think it's so helpful. I find this so interesting. Hopefully everyone listening also found it very interesting. And like I say, we're looking at trying to bring in mental fitness to Moreton Hall Health Club as a whole. Obviously, we're starting with a 6-week challenge, but we're always open to ideas that will help our members get the most out of the gym. And I definitely think being mentally fit, mentally resilient, will of course help you to thrive, really, and to get, even just to get your gym sessions and like have a good routine and eat well, and everything is so interlinked. I just think it's, yeah, such an important conversation. So thank you so much for coming in. And if anyone wants to work with you, I know you do loads of workshops and seminars for businesses, and you know, if anyone's listening and they think, gosh, we really need this at work or at home, or I know you even do like school education, can you tell us a bit more, how do they get more of your knowledge, basically?
Yeah, thank you. So it is really broad what I do. Everything's underpinned by the science, really, of mental health. But I work with organisations to help them develop their mental health strategies. So I do lots of general awareness work. I also work with line managers to help them to have supportive conversations with the people that they manage, and just breaking down stigma, really, and working on culture, things like psychological safety, so that people actually feel safe enough to have those conversations in the workplace and to access the support that you've got in place. Yeah, I do go into schools and I do, I teach adolescent mental health. So if anybody's a parent, you'll know what I mean about adolescence. It's a very tricky time in terms of mental health. So I do a lot of work around adolescence and adolescent mental health. I do parent talks. Yeah. Lots of things. Specialise in male mental health, actually. So I do a lot of suicide prevention work. I work a lot with the construction industry and industries where we get lots of men together because of the suicide statistics. So, yeah, I've spent the last year focusing on male psychology. Fascinating.
I'm sure it is.
And on that note.
Yeah. And do you have any, if people want to, like, email you, or can we do business cards at the reception? Or, I don't know, how can they get to you if they want to book something?
Yes, so you can go on my website at blossomtraining.org, or just email me at anita@blossomtraining.org. But we can maybe leave a link with the podcast as well.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for your time. I just feel like that's so valuable, and hopefully a lot of people have taking away some tips and things. And like I say, I'm really excited to get it into the 6-week challenge. I think it's going to make a really big difference. So yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.